Good morning and welcome to CBO's conference on climate change. I'm delighted that you're all here with us this morning. Global climate change is one of the nation's most substantial and significant long-term challenges, and CBO will be devoting significant, already has, and will continue to be devoting significant resources to evaluating both the economics and the budgetary effects of business as usual and attempts to change business as usual. As you all know, the fundamental problem that we face is a global one in which greenhouse gas emissions have been rising, especially carbon dioxide emissions, from about 280 parts per million in the pre-industrial age to about 380 parts per million today. Temperatures have already risen by perhaps 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit over the past 150 years. You guys can't hear me in the back? There is not an on-off switch. Okay. I'll just basically yell until the volume gets turned up. Continue. Is that better? Can you hear me better now? Okay. Continue. You know what? I'll also do this. Continuing on that same business as usual path will involve many significant risks and potential costly economic damages. One of the features of global climate change, however, is the very substantial uncertainty that surrounds the path that we are currently on, including exactly what emission levels will follow from a business as usual path, including what the effects of those emissions would be on concentrations once you take into account feedback effects, sequestration, and other potential effects on the climate, what the effects of any given level of concentration will be on the climate, and then what effects that climatic impact will have on the economy and on society, each of which of those stages has significant amounts of uncertainty associated with it. The models that we have tried to estimate, in some sense, best guesses of what those effects will likely be. And out of that come some expected damages from a business as usual path. One thing that I would very much like to highlight and that I hope comes out throughout the day is that focusing just on those expected damages may not be the most insightful way of looking at the problem that we face. And in particular, that we face some risk. One doesn't know how big it is, of potentially much larger and catastrophic costs from a business as usual path, from things that are difficult to anticipate, including, but that scientists have identified as possibilities involving the thermal haline circulation, the melting of various different ice sheets, and other nonlinear dynamics that could occur and that are difficult to build into an expected damages function. Focusing on the risk of catastrophic damage and then therefore viewing policy change as an insurance policy against those risks or reducing those risks has received, in my opinion, too little attention in the debate thus far, in which expected damages have been mostly compared to upfront costs for dealing with climate change. Now, it is very important to realize that there are costs. There are costs to research and development, there are costs to adaptation, and there are costs to reducing greenhouse gas emissions relative to what we would otherwise emit. And those are the three policy avenues or mechanisms that could be adopted to bend us off of the business as usual path. So we need to be evaluating these things in terms of both the reduction in expected damages and then the insurance policy perspective, that is, the benefit that we get from reducing the risk to some degree of catastrophic damage against the costs of those various different policy mechanisms. And that is particularly complicated by the significant uncertainty that I already mentioned. Even if we know that there is some catastrophic risk, if we don't know how big it is and we don't know how much we're reducing it, it's very difficult to calibrate what the appropriate level of policy intervention is in response to that. We do know several things, though. We do know that a command and control type approach to reducing emissions will be more costly than an incentive-based approach, because a command and control type approach does not allow the power of market incentives to help identify the lowest cost sources of emissions. We also know from a variety of research that within incentive-based approaches, a tax is generally more efficient than a cap and trade system, because a tax allows reductions to occur in the years in which reductions are cheapest to obtain, and because it provides a level of price certainty that can be beneficial to both households and to especially to firms. A cap and trade system, however, can be made to look somewhat similar to a tax system, for example, by imposing a safety valve or a cap at which additional permits would be sold at a given price, and by allowing banking and borrowing across different years so that you can obtain more flexibility in when reductions in emissions occur. And we will be hearing more about some of that throughout the day. Within cap and trade, there are two key issues that need to be evaluated beyond just the design of the system itself, that is, whether it has a safety valve and whether it has banking and borrowing. And those two key issues are whether to sell or give away the allowances. So you, in a cap and trade system, you have a cap and you're going to have a certain number of allowances. Do you give those away or do you sell them? And secondly, how stringently do you set the cap? At what target are you aiming at in terms of the level of emissions? And those are the two panels that we're going to have with us this morning. The first panel will explore the efficiency and equity consequences of giving away versus selling cap and trade allowances, and relatedly, how one would use or how policymakers could use the revenue if the permits were sold. Terry Dinnan from CBO will be moderating the panel, and it will include the bios for all of our participants are in your packet, and all of our participants are known luminaries in the field. In fact, I saw a blog posting on this conference that said, "The period best period conference period ever." Period. And I think that's a tribute to the people that we were able to get to be with us this morning. They include Larry Goulder from Stanford, Dallas Boutreau from Resources for the Future, Gib Metcalf from Tufts University, and Dick Gettle from Northeastern University. And our second panel will then examine the analyses and estimates of the impact of different levels of stringency in the cap itself, that is, how tight the cap is, and try to put on a common footing estimates of different bills from EIA, EPA, MIT, and identify where there are areas of agreement and areas of disagreement. Bob Shackleton from CBO will moderate that panel, which will occur after a short break in the middle of the morning. And the panel will include Francisco de la Chesnay from EPA, Howard Grunspeck from EIA, Jake Jacoby from MIT, and John Wyant from Stanford University. So again, I just want to welcome you to this conference, highlight that CBO has already done significant amounts of work on climate change, and it will be doing even more in the future, and hope that we all learn something from the panels this morning. Thank you very much, and Terry.